So if you find this teaching on not self difficult, it should be that way. Because if it was easy, it wouldn't take a Buddha to figure it out. So if you find it confusing, I think there's hope for you. If you think it's easy, I think there's trouble. So there's a difference between believing in something called not self and just spouting the party line. This is not self, because it's what Buddhists say. Or disbelieving it, right? We were on a nice walk on the beautiful river there. And belief and disbelief is a dead-end road, isn't it? You take a position. But understanding is different, because that's the nature of what we mean by vipassana, or insight. So to understand something, you do ponder, you think, well, what's he on about? So there is a felt sense of me being here, isn't there? You can't. Most of us, maybe the arahants would say, actually, no, you're wrong, you're dumb, but it was a good breakfast. And I enjoyed it, and so on and so forth. So the final realization of that, what that might mean, is enlightenment. But the way of approaching that is quite systematic and quite gradual, quite well thought out. And the teaching of anatta, teaching on not self, is always conjoined with the teaching on conditionality, on what we call paticca-samuppada, cause and effect. With this, there's that. Without this, there's not that. This, that, they call it. This, that, this, that. And that you can't observe in consciousness, how causality works. And this is what we do in Buddhist practice. We first of all lay down the causes for a healthy sense of self-respect. So again, the first teachings in when the Buddha would give the gradual teaching was always generosity, and then ethics. So that living a life of goodness builds up a storehouse of goodness. Living a life of generosity, being responsible to our community, to our relationships, to our environment, etc., builds up a foundation of goodness, self-respect, lack of remorse, a sense of happiness, because one is living a good life. Because if you approach these emptiness teachings from some kind of dysfunctional personality and just try to hide that away, then the insight would be dysfunctional, because it would still be rooted in all kinds of fears and things like that. So a healthy sense of being a human being is the foundation. And then there's the recommendation of training the mind in stability. So that's what I have been suggesting, of just this very simple, brush your teeth. And we always say that, but then people, I must brush my teeth mindfully. And they're not training, they're just forcing themselves to brush their teeth in some, or maybe really slowly, I don't know, brush your teeth slowly, I can't imagine. But if you get right understanding going, what am I doing? Well, I'm just learning to collect attention on what I'm doing. Then it's actually quite beautiful. It's not this imposition of will from some idea that I must be a good monk and brush my teeth mindfully. It's from kindness, it's from understanding, it's from wisdom. And then it's quite doable. You just keep looking, training in this. It's, oh no, there I go again. No, just compose the mind. So that is the development of samadhi, and where the mind has a certain sense of stability and stillness, and this storehouse of goodness, rather than a storehouse of remorse and regret. To the best of our ability, that's the way we operate. And then in the practice of insight, it's a kind of deconstruction of one's usual perceived sense of self. And the first step in that is what we call sakkaya ditti, or personality view. And that is quite simply beginning to observe something like annoyance about someone, my neighbor in Ottawa, say, I feel annoyed at them, and seeing the difference between the storyline of annoyance, those fools, why don't they turn their music down, I'm trying to meditate, all that sense of me and them, and then seeing that, oh, this is a mind state. This is the mind state of annoyance. Okay, so that's the first step in deconstructing the strong sense of self that we have. It's a big step. It's called objectivity, or knowing the mood of the mind, different ways it's talked about. Within that, there's still a sense of me watching, isn't there? Still a sense of me doing, certainly. That's the last step. Now, that's what we'll call asmimana, or the different ways it's talked about in the text of that more deep sense of being or self, and that's approached when the mind's very, very quiet, and one turns to that. So the more one can witness to things as moods of mind, and yet live a responsible life, live a good social dharma, and then watch the moods of the mind, then the defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion lessen. They fall away because we're no longer acting on them. So if I feel any amount of annoyance or anger or hatred or aversion, and I take responsibility for that, and I know, well, that's aversion, that's unskillful, and I bring it back to the composure of mind, then the tendency to aversion falls away, right? And as that falls away, then the mind has more and more stillness. And then in that stillness, that becomes the basis for the deeper investigation. Another way of looking at the kind of deconstruction of the whole sense of self is through the paradigm of the Four Noble Truths. So you have suffering, the cause, the end, the path. I've been hammering away at that. Suffering has to be understood, the cause has to be abandoned, the end has to be realized, the path has to be developed. So you feel some kind of contraction in yourself, because of whatever, feel anxiety or loneliness or whatever it is. And then rather than just seeking a compensation, potato chips or whatever you like, rather than seeking a compensation and that which changes, you come back, okay, what's the cause of suffering? And you see, well, the cause is attachment to craving. And you figure that one out in all the different areas of your mind. And that's a deconstruction too, because the sense of self is very much bound up with me becoming. Like all the, if you look at all the anticipation in our minds, how much of our lives are lived in the future, it's extraordinary, isn't it? You know, it's always just going off to the future, there's a lot of that. So the whole thing of rehearsal and replay that we live in, and actually to be in the present moment in a very pure way is not so easy. And the craving mind, and the habituation to the craving mind, and the sense of self that comes from that, is also a way that we're deconstructing the sense of solid sense of self. So then, as those fall away, the first step is really the like insight practice is that sakkaya ditti. Something like greed and hatred is actually the total eradication of those is quite a ways down the path. So there's strong energies we're working with. It's not like, you know, you see sakkaya ditti and say, then that's the ball game. That's kind of you're just in the ballpark actually. Because before we establish objective knowing, we're not even in the ball game, in the sense of insight. We're in the ball game of Buddhism because we're living decent lives. But as long as we believe in the storylines, we're still caught in that trap of this very gross kind of a self. So as we witness to these things and the doubts and the fears and all that, they have less and less power, yeah? Less and less power to attract us. So you get less and less of that gross sense of self arising. So if you think back when you started the path, how maybe if you got really jealous about something, a strong sense of self would come up, and then after 20 years of working on it, you know, it's just more, it's kind of like a hiccup. You still see it, but it hasn't got that power anymore to delude. Whereas maybe 20 years ago, you really, really felt very, very strong. So you see the sense of, like, say something like jealousy, has less and less power to delude, and that delusion means there's a weaker sense of me and that person and my problem and my jealousy. So that's a weakening of that gross sense of self, but you still have this sort of me watching, me doing, me in the control tower, don't you? And that's when it gets very interesting. Because then the mind is silent enough to turn, as I've been saying, to turn back on itself, to just witness to the very witnessing. And that you need a lot of stability, and you need a kind of right view curiosity, and you have to wait a lot, and you have to wait for nothing. It's very difficult, because any kind of craving, I'm waiting for it, you're done, because it's craving. So the strategy is to abandon craving. If you keep on that, if you keep abandoning and getting to know the subtleties of craving more and more and more and more, then the path opens, because the realization of Nibbana is also synonymous with the cessation of craving. And so it's a kind of via negativa. It's like abandoning, letting go, renouncing, rather than getting, acquiring, attaining. It's a deconstructing rather than an obtaining of some idea of what the final goal might be. So it's a very difficult teaching, that, you know, it's almost counterintuitive. What do you mean I'm not here? And so you kick me in the knee. Huh? Does your knee hurt? Whose knee is it? But that's why it takes a Buddha to kind of suss this one out. It's you know, like, it's not any old bloke that had this kind of insight. And so the Buddha kind of laid down this strategy of letting go of craving, so that the mind comes more and more to the stillness of being. And so in training in that graduated path, you have things like cultivating present moment awareness. So that's very important. Getting a sense of being without craving, presence without becoming, that kind of thing. And then just slowly working away. When the sense of self arises, that can be known in that gross sense. So if I'm really fantasizing about some beautiful project which I'm going to do next year, it's not just a project, it's not just abstract thought. That's planning, that's very good. That's good planning. But when I fantasize, it's me there enjoying the project. There's a strong sense of me, and that's what you want to get a hold of. Planning's fine, but that fantasy where I'm getting off on whatever I'm fantasizing, there's a strong sense of me, self, in that. And yet, that can be known. And you might ask, well, who knows that? Well, that's the final question. But deal that with that first. So when you get a very, very loud voice of me and other, it can be as like, might be like self-consciousness, it might be anxiety, it might be highly judgmental or highly critical, or how could they do that, or disappointment. That strong sense of me, know that as an object. If you know it as an object, then that's the beginning of Sakkaya Ditti, of seeing that. And as you witness to that, and then take it into the body. Take that contraction and witness it in the body and let it process through you. And you have the stability of the mind. So if in this retreat the mind does become quite quiet, then just wait. And you just, and your mind becomes quiet. Oh, now I'll get it. You're done. Sense of self arises, doesn't it? I got it. Look. Oh, damn it. So the sense of self is just because it's so much, and it's such a big lollipop, isn't it, enlightenment? It's played up so much that you think, ooh. So it's like the kind of ultimate greed thing. It's better than a Lexus, isn't it? And yet, that's not the way to go. You can't do it that way. So it's in terms of effort, it's very, very subtle. And much of the discovery of that is through failure. You just kind of fail so many times, you kind of give up. Not in abject passivity, but you realize, no, just give up. Just relax. And then it happens. You just kind of try, 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 and then, oh, I give up. And, wow. And then giving up is quite hard to do. And then you try again to give up. It doesn't work. So you kind of keep hammering away at this. So if you can introduce this idea, what do I want that I don't have? What do I have that I don't want? Keep that. I mean, what is the wanting now? And then what does it feel like to be at ease and relaxed, receptive? Get more and more familiar with that territory, because that's the territory you want to hang out in. Okay, let's sit for a while. I'll leave it to you to whatever practice you like to do. In the far room, farthest room down the hall. I think Philip put up a sign, didn't you? Yeah.